The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
Hello there, and welcome to another Damn You Hollywood. I'm Alexis Haina with Honeysuckle Rose Creations, and tonight we're talking about the movie that I don't care what they call it. Let's call it what it really is. Ghostface Takes Manhattan. Yeah, sorry. It was right there. I have no idea why they didn't go with the more obvious title. Either way, yes, we're talking Scream 6, and here is your host, Robert Winfrey.
Yeah, that's me. We wish Mark all the best. He is out on a family vacation for this week. He should be back next week to talk Shazam.
He had to get away from all of us for just a little bit. I mean, too much time with any of us will drive anyone into the loony bin.
Let's be fair. It's not us he's getting away from in the physical sense. All right. But joining us on this particular panel, we have reconvened the Midnight Society. We have Jason Teasley with us. Jason, how you doing?
Doing good, doing good. I'm glad that we got the cast back together, the original four that from Candyman last year, to talk more horror movies.
Yeah, and as Jason just referenced, joining us again, we have Dorian Price. Dorian, welcome back.
Hi, good to be back. God, it's weird to think it's all just like been a year since Candyman. Wow.
Tempest Fugit.
You right. Can't escape us, Dorian. You know, I don't.
Back in the black hole.
Yeah, it's like we say black hole. Mark says we're a cult.
Mark wishes he could run a cult.
You know, I should have wondered when you know when the screen pops up. Do you want to join the chat? It has like a big red eject button on the side, and it keeps blinking at you. You don't hit it, and then you know you're stuck forever, and the button's just mocking you.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, the four of us usually get together when we're talking horror because we are, well, Dorian is one of our most esteemed guests, but Robert, Jason, and I are usually the three with the stronger stomachs who love talking about gore and violence and serial killers.
Yeah, it's always a nice extent, any excuse to kind of stretch my violently nihilistic side of personality, because that's where my nihilism goes. It is externally directed rather than internally.
By the way, Dory, nice job with the red light, because frankly, I feel like I need to put on my 3D glasses while looking at you.
Well, thank God if this wasn't Scream 3D.
I almost watched it
here.
This
movie was really
watched it in 3D.
Yeah, this movie was released in 3D. I should have asked prior if any of us saw it, but it looks like we all just said screwed and saw it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
All right. So, yes, we were talking Scream 6, which I should have kept my screen up here so I could actually go through all the details. Brought to us by Paramount Pictures, Spyglass Media Group. This is the sixth continuation in Wes Craven's longest running and I would argue most financially successful franchise. Let's go ahead and dive into the plot summary. Mr. Winfrey, go ahead.
Alrighty, so as we've intimated already, this takes place in New York City. Because if you're not in Los Angeles, Chicago, small town southern USA, or the Great Lakes region, you have to be in New York. That's all there is.
Yes.
We open with a fun little play on the traditional kind of My cat loses his mind. We open with a fun play on the opening slasher kills from the last couple of movies where Samara Weaving is lured into a dark alley and violently murdered. We then follow her killer as he goes back to his place. He is looking with his roommate to set up a ghost face-like attack series on Tara and Sam Carpenter, the sister duo from the previous Scream movie. We set 1 year after that one for the for the people who care about the chronology. Only to then be called by a ghost face killer and lured around his house to find his roommate butchered in his fridge. And if I were a comic inclined person, I'd make a girl about women in fridges here, but it was Greg, so we leave it at that.
Oh, I was the only one in the theater, and I actually said out loud, "Oh, don't tell me they fridged him." I mean, I know it's not the same meaning, but you don't get an opportunity to pun like that every day.
It's rare.
Speaking of puns, nice little comment from our contributor, Zachary. What do you guys think? An ice show called Ice Scream 6?
Scream on Ice.
It could work.
It's not the worst thing I've heard this franchise might delve off into. So anyway, he is then killed by one of our ghost face killers, and I say one of because there's only ever been one instance where it's just one. So multiple ghost faces is kind of par for the course. But Tara and Sam are both in New York. Tara is going to school. She's trying to get on with her life, and Sam is a little bit stuck in the past. She's going to therapy somewhat unsuccessfully. Two of their surviving friends from the previous movie. We have Chad and
his sister.
Hang on, I got it.
Randy 2.0.
Mindy.
Let's face it; these characters are nowhere near as memorable as the ones that we got from the previous incarnations of the franchise.
No, they're not, and I'll get to that in a minute or two. But they're with Chad and Mindy and a couple of new people to round out the list of suspects slash pad the body count slash pad the runtime just a little bit. We have Mindy's girlfriend, Annika. We have Chad's roommate, Ethan. Ethan. If not, I'm just going to call him not Randy Quaid because he's not Randy Quaid, but looks like him. And Sam and Tara's roommate, Quinn. And this is our new happy-go-lucky, plucky band of meat puppets. they start being one of Sam's old driver's licenses is found at the scene of the crime with our two college students who were murdered. So they get called in for, hey, what's up with that? By Quinn's father, who is the lead detective. On their way to the precinct, they are called by Ghostface and then attacked, leading to one of the genuinely like best sequences in this entire movie when Ghostface goes on a rampage through a bodega.
Also the first time we have seen someone in a Ghostface mask using a gun, which kind of sets the whole tone. This is not our traditional killer. This is someone who is kind of rewriting the rules as it is.
And it's a very messed up looking mask, which gets explained later in the movie. But the joke I made, since the ice cream on ice was brought up, was, so since the mask looks really run down, is this hobo ghost face with a shotgun? I mean, I'd still watch it, but.
It's a good one.
Hobo with a Shotgun's a great movie.
Yes, it is. Everyone else.
We reviewed it.
Great's a stretch.
I couldn't get through it. Too violent for my taste.
It's a dumb movie, but it's obvious that the filmmakers were making it to be dumb. But we're not talking about Hobo with a Shotgun. Continue, Bob.
Sadly, there is not a lot of Rutger Hauer in this movie, no.
Right. Well, kind of hard to, since, you know, dead.
Hey, they brought Egon back in that Ghostbusters Afterlife. They could do it with Rutger Hauer.
Touché.
I'm sure enough film exists of him to turn him into a hologram, so... Anyway, they talk with the police officer whose jurisdiction is usurped by a returning Hayden Panettiere as Kirby. They all show up. We get our exposition dump about what we might be facing. Gale Weathers shows up. Ghostface murders Sam's therapist and steals her files in a minor bit of detail that goes absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, no, actually, it does have a point to it. And I'll explain what the point is later once we get to the killers.
I was just commenting that this is what the directors of Ready or Not did with their two returning cast members.
That's true. Just violently murder them.
Hey, I gotta give credit. Ready or Not's one of my favorite horror movies to come out in recent years.
It is a good one.
We gave it a very positive review here. You can find that in the archives if you're interested. One of the other characters worth mentioning here is a very superfluous neighbor character that Samantha has been dating, who serves as an escape mechanism for them when they are attacked within their apartment. And in this attack, Quinn is apparently killed. Annika's killed. Poor Annika gets dropped between buildings.
That is one of the most brutal deaths I've seen in a Scream movie.
And actually, yeah, bouncing off of his, one of the things that really kind of disappointed me about the movie, and I can get more into it when it's my full turn, but Annika's death is the best makeup kill of the entire
movie.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
The rest of it, and for anybody who's, you know, watching this before you watch the movie, it's a lot of overuse of stabbing, which, I mean, I get, you know, it's Scream, you know, even inside Scream, their movie version is called Stab, but the one thing that you won't get a lot of is very creative kills. So if you're a horror fan that likes creative kills, you're not going to get it here, except for the, you know, good 5 seconds when Annika gets, well, dropped off the ladder and smashes her face into a dumpster.
Pulls her best Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah.
I'm glad they had her hit the dumpster, not because I'm some like sadistic film viewer, but otherwise that's a very survivable fall is more my gripe with that. Like, they're not 20 stories up. You're 3 stories up. Like, I'm not saying that's a fun fall, but that's very survivable.
That was kind of what caught me off guard when they, okay, so the idea that they're trapped in there and the neighbor sees them and the neighbor says, hey, I got a ladder. And they put it between their buildings. Cool idea. Yeah. But the fact that these three girls are so gut-wrenchingly terrified that they have to go so slowly across the ladder when there's a serial killer pounding on the door. I am terrified of heights beyond rational thought, and even I would have been, move the fuck over, let's get across the stupid ladder. I don't get why they were freaking out. It's like, you're not that high. Yeah, if Annika had fallen and not hit the dumpster, she probably would have broken back, broken legs at worst.
I mean, she should have been dead a lot sooner than that based on the stab wound alone, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, also, there's a lot of stomach stabbing in this movie. It seems to be, I was wondering if that was going to tie into something deeper, like, you know, anything, but it was like,
it was gut-wrenching.
Oh, God, Jesus, save it for Evan and Zachary. No, that has always been, like, the de facto stab placement in the Scream movies, if you think about it. Everyone gets gutted.
Yeah, or, and I think my gripe with it before I, not to get too deep into this, my gripe is how inconsistently the value of the gut stab is applied. Like, sometimes it's very fatal. Other times it's, you know, Jenna Ortega walking it off at the finale because, hey, 6 inches of steel right through the lower abdomen angled upward. That's not bad.
Well, not someone as skinny as she is.
A mild inconvenience. Oh, bother.
Tis but a flesh wound.
Right. Your guts are out. Ah, tis but a flesh wound.
Certainly an inconvenience.
What are you going to do? Bleed on me?
So, again, Gail has showed up. She discovers some evidence of... She discovers the lair of our bad guys. They have a big old shrine to the various ghost faces throughout the year. The ghost face killer has been dropping the previous masks of all the previous incarnations of Ghostface, counting down from the most recent one back towards, in theory, Billy Loomis. They devise a plan to lure out the killer using some bait. Our sisters, they try. This doesn't go over well. Ghostface instead attacks Gail in her home, murders her boyfriend again, and nearly kills Gale, but some quick thinking gets our protagonist there in time to stop her from dying right then and there. And we're told later in some ADR lines that she survived.
Yeah.
Was that ADR? I thought he was on screen when he said, I just talked to them. She's going to be okay.
He might have been. It just annoyed me. It feels like one of those things where she was supposed to die, but it didn't test well and they changed it.
Yeah.
Well, let's face it. The shrine scene builds up for one thing majorly. And it's part of the whole theme, I think, with this movie is that this movie itself is a shrine to horror movies, especially the franchise of itself. That scene is filled with so many freaking Easter eggs.
Okay.
I mean,
you can't count them. Like, there's so many. Anyway, they decide to... they all wind up having to take the subway, which leads to a couple of cool sequences where they get split up. And I just looked up her name, but I've already forgotten it. Mindy gets stabbed by a ghost face, but you weren't sure it was ghost face because it's Halloween in New York and there's a bunch of ghost faces running around. But one of the real ghost face killers stabs Mindy. She is somewhat saved by the fast action of Ethan. And again, we find out later she survives, but she gets stabbed several times. She gets stabbed a couple of times. They all wind up back in the shrine, which they have where they've set up a potential kill box. The detective in charge calls them and says, by the way, Kirby went nuts. She hasn't been a member of the FBI for several months now, and she became obsessed. So they start thinking that it's Kirby. The ghost faces show up. They stab Chad approximately 20 times in the lower torso and up by the chest.
Don't worry, he'll walk it off.
He survives because, and this is the in-world explanation, plot armor.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, they call their group the Core Four, and literally the line is, he's getting rolled out, you know, we've just been all sad that he's been stabbed and we think he's dead. And he gets, they're like, oh, we got another live one. They roll him out and they literally walk up to him and say, how did you survive? And all he does is just put up his fingers like this.
He calls the Four Horsemen. He's yeah. Arn Anderson.
Seriously, why didn't they go with the Four Horsemen? That would have been, I mean, okay, I'm assuming that there's some kind of wrestling taboo yeah. on that, but that would have yeah. still been way cooler.
It's not a fight you want to have necessarily. So anyway, Kirby shows up. The detective shows up, the detective shoots Kirby, revealing that he is the mastermind and the other, and there are two other ghost faces, bringing our average to two per movie, because before there was a singular one that just stood out like a sore thumb.
Screen three is the most forgettable. I joked when I saw the Easter eggs in the shrine, I was like, okay, so I see stuff from one, two, and five, because hell if I can remember anything from three or four.
You are not
well.
Wrong.
They got the knife that comes into play that stabs Kirby again from four
in the exact same spot.
Yeah. And from three there was the robe. His robe was on one of the mannequins.
Yeah. But revealed to be his accomplices are Ethan, who is actually his son, and Quinn, whose death they faked.
And is his daughter.
Yeah. Well, we already knew that. And they're all here seeking revenge on Sam because this is actually the family of Richie, her boyfriend who went nuts in the first movie. And I mean, look, if someone killed Randy Quaid, I'd be inclined to seek vengeance, but you know.
Yeah.
But that's what this is.
The family of the character that we said diverged just a little too much when they found out he was the killer.
Just a bit. So we get our big showdown. There's a big fight. Quinn gets hit in the face with a brick and then shot in the head. Ethan gets stabbed through the mouth by
Tara.
He gets our final jump scare, which is really bad. Like, it's not good.
Yeah, but the line Tara gives him when she stabs him is freaking awesome.
Yes, that is good.
Yeah, you're gonna die a virgin.
So she stabs him. Sam and the detective fall off the balcony in this old theater. They both go unconscious, and apparently he's out long enough for Sam to set up an elaborate ghost face attack where she dons the mask and the cloak and then stabs him to death. Again, Ethan shows up for a final jump scare, but Kirby is here to shove a TV on his face, the same one that they used to kill poor Matthew Lillard in the first movie.
Which, you noticed... Sorry, what'd you say, Dorian?
He's apparently their uncle. or like no, it's the two characters. Now I can't remember her name. Is it Mindy?
Mindy and Chad are Randy's.
Yeah,
niece and nephew.
No, did you catch what they said when they looked at the TV when they first went into the shrine? They said that's the one that killed Stu, and one of the characters said supposedly. Because apparently there's been all of this that they mentioned. A big part of this movie is the online community's reaction to the Woodsboro killers. Yeah. Because somebody, who we later find out was Quinn, started a rumor that Sam was the one who killed everyone and she framed Richie and Amber?
Yeah.
And she's now dealing with this just absolute nightmare of everyone assuming that she's a killer, and there's all these... It's the Reddit board that we all know, that we see regularly when we go online.
Yeah, but, her Twitter feed is just a dumpster fire.
But apparently, there is now a rumor that they're trying to find a way to bring Matthew Lillard back in the future installment.
That's been a rumor for a long time. Like, I seem to... I vaguely recall rumors that, like, he was going to show up and Scream 2. Because getting a TV dropped on your head isn't necessarily fatal. Anyway, our group goes out and reunites. The miracles of modern medicine prevent anyone else from dying. And Sam takes one last look at the ghost face mask before dropping it and walking off with her sister, them both having gone through a bit of personal growth, where Tara learns to be a little bit more responsible and to try and process her trauma, and Sam learns that it's okay to let go from time to time and not be a helicopter sibling. So that's where we are, and presumably where we will pick up in what I have to assume will be the next one, because of course...
Yeah, they've already greenlit 7.
I don't know what they're going to do.
Oh, you have to talk about the after credit scene, though.
Yeah, the after credit scene was great.
Oh, yeah, all 3 seconds of it.
Yeah. Just him cocking the shotgun?
No.
When was the other one?
The one at the end of the credits where it's Mindy stands up. It's like when they're out in the quad and they're, you know, from that scene earlier when they were talking about, you know, suspects. And she literally goes, not every movie has to have an end credit scene. And then it cuts to black.
Yeah. Oh.
Nicely done.
Patience.
Be careful with that lampshade.
Yeah, just a bit. So that's the movie. I don't know where you guys want to start with this.
Well, like I said, I feel this movie is a tribute to horror movies in general, not only from all the scenes or all the little Easter eggs in the shrine, but the amount of horror costumes in that subway scene alone. I literally lost count. We see at least one Freddy Krueger, as we see a Jason Voorhees. I saw one or two Michael Myers.
The Babadook.
Say again, Dorian?
Billy the Puppet's there for half a second.
Yeah.
I noticed one girl dressed up as Samara Weaving's character from Ready or Not. Nice touch.
And there was a Pennywise.
Yeah, again, like you could just go down the list. I'm pretty sure everyone shows up at some point.
I could be wrong, but I read that there is at least one costume from every character, or one costume from each of Wes Craven's previous movies.
I'd buy
hidden
that.
In there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one of the people under the stairs. It moved too quick, but I think somebody was kind of dressed up as Eddie Murphy from Vampire in Brooklyn, which, if you were going to leave out any Wes Craven movie, that might have been the one to leave out. But, you know, I wasn't on set, so no one listens to me. But yeah, I think one of them was from Last House on the Left. But again, they're in very quick shots and they're moving, partially because I don't think they wanted to hang on them too much for the audience to, like, then go to their phones and go, who the hell is that guy?
Yeah.
Well, the idea is also that it's supposed to be disorienting, because we see multiple ghost faces that they mentioned earlier, that the sale of ghost face masks and costumes had skyrocketed because everyone wants to dress like a currently active serial killer.
Well, if you'll recall, wasn't it last year that everyone wanted to be Jeffrey Dahmer because there was a couple of the true crime documentaries about him that came out on Netflix. It's like, hey, we'll sell Jeffrey Dahmer costumes at Walmart. This is a bad idea, people. Just a bad idea.
Hey, it made money.
Did no one learn from the wisdom of the original Halloween 2 in 1981? Ben Tramer got hit by a freaking van and almost shot because he was dressed up like Michael Myers.
It's true.
Learn from the wisdom of Ben Tramer. Don't dress as the asshole who's currently killing everyone.
And this kind of follows the theme from the previous Scream movies as well. You had Scream last year in Woodsboro. Scream 2, this one, both off at college. So we're going back to Hollywood for Scream 7, to mirror Scream 3.
It'll probably be, it won't be Hollywood. It'll be the Netflix warehouse in Virginia or something, wherever their soundstage is.
But
we could kick off the jams and go to Bollywood.
We could.
Yeah, we got, and it even mirrors Scream 2 as having a family member being the killer. I mean, family members as killers. That kind of resonated in this one as well, to mirror Scream 2.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of mirroring going on between the two. They twist it enough so that it's not... I suppose... Here's my big gripe with this. And I wasn't spoiled for this, but I figured it out. Like, once you realize that the detective is one of them, everything else becomes fairly easy to predict.
Well... Actually, my wife, Amber, called out who the killer was from the scene where they're in Jenna Ortega and hers talking in the bedroom. And he goes, "I know," and she goes, "I know what it feels like to lose a brother." And then it fast forwards and you see the guy, the dad, coming out of the apartment. And he goes, and Amber looks at me and goes, "You know he's the killer, right?" And I was like, "No. Why would he kill?" I said, "Why would he kill his own daughter?" And she's like, "She's not dead." And I was like, "No.
If you don't see enough of the body, you got to assume they're not dead."
Yeah, because she, like I said, she says, "I know what it feels like. I lost my brother." And you know, you kind of, with that line itself, my wife was able to figure out, well, her brother's from the other Scream movie, and that's her dad, so those two are the killers. Well, we was caught off guard by the other brother, but she figured out the cop and the daughter.
In theory, that's your big twist, is that there's three this time instead of two. But
yeah,
I will admit, Quinn's quote-unquote death scene really rubbed me the wrong way, and not just because, yeah, they were setting up that she wasn't actually dead. I just... there's no scene of Ghostface supposedly sneaking in or anything. We see... the next door or the neighbor across the way looking, and he sees the killer, and she's laying there on the phone, turned away from the killer, talking to her dad. And part of me was just like, it's going to be revealed that this is like one of her suitors or something, and she's just getting kinky with somebody who wants to dress up as Ghostface or something, right? Because it was so weird, just like, and killer, and Quinn's laying right there, and she has not noticed there's someone in her bedroom, WTF.
Yeah, because that's a famous TikTok trend right now, is the whole ghost face killer grabbing a girl by her hair and taking a picture. And that's what I thought too. And especially when it shows him holding her up, I was like, yeah, this is like, because they established that she's promiscuous and that she's very easy. And I was like, yeah, that, I thought the same thing, that it's just something, a kink that she's got going on, and that's how it's going to play out. It's going to kind of be a red herring. And it kind of was.
Yeah, admittedly that, and not going to lie, the development of, what's his name, Ethan? Was sorely lacking.
He was cardboard.
He was cardboard, and I'm not just talking about his performance in Avatar 2.
Yeah, that too.
No, I was I mean, yeah, obviously it's a big reveal, supposedly, when we find out that he's one of the other killers, but they didn't do anything with him. He gets no character other than Virgin. You know, he doesn't get any cool lines or anything. He's not funny. I mean, no. I was just like, so... that's all you're doing with him?
And I'm going to say this. One big glaring negative that I have is the fact that they keep identifying the killer so early in the movie, and then they just try to push you away from it. And it's like, then at the end, you're like, oh, well, They said that at the beginning of the movie, because when she's going on her big ramble,
we're in a franchise.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, you know, he rigged the lottery to be the roommate, and you know, and all this, and she knew who she was being. You know, she knew when she answered the ad, and then it's like, okay, this is totally way too convenient.
Well, it was a very specific line too, of like, you know, how would I turn out? How would I get to be their roommate? Oh, it's easy to, you know, mess with the roommate lottery, and yeah. It felt like one of those moments. And it's sometimes it's okay, especially in satires, but it's done a lot in drama movies too, where you're almost expecting after the character says a line like that for them to turn to the audience and go, "Got that, audience?"
Yeah. Or as me and Mark say, Keenan Ivory Wayne shows up in the corner with the message sign.
Yeah, message. Yeah, exactly. I actually called him pretty early too, that he was at least one of them, because again, there was nothing for him to do. There's actually really no reason for him to be there.
Yeah.
Like, I actually figured it out in this order. I called again, Ethan, because I'm like, you're doing nothing, man. The only reason you're here is to be like, "Mwahaha, it's with me the whole time." Mindy, yeah, because her death was like, they were showing everybody else's death, you know, very close up, you know, even the first two idiots, you know, who were trying to, you know, finish the film. Quinn's death, sorry, just went by too quick. And the minute I called the dad was similar to when your wife called it, because he walks out, he's, you know, he's kind of stumbling, he's crying, and when he gets close to Sam, he just looks at her, and she puts her hand on his shoulder, and he's like, "My whole family's gone." And I'm like, that is not the reaction of a human being. The reaction of a human being is for, and again, even if you don't, you know, you're against hitting anyone, but like, he would have like shoved her, like tried to grab her and be like, "This is your fault. You brought this down on us. You know, why couldn't you stay where you were? Why did you have to bring this hell to my doorstep?"
Yeah.
Similar, but slightly different. I already brought up Halloween 2 before, but, when Sheriff Brackett finds out about his daughter being killed, he gets up in Loomis's face. He's like, "This is your damn fault. You know, you let him out." You know, that's a reaction of someone who's very much grieving. They want someone to blame. And when he didn't, I was like, "Nah, yeah, okay. You all are in this together." So, because again, the thing was they kept trying to make Hayden Panettiere and I'm sorry if I butchered that last name.
I think we're going to hear like five different pronunciations of that name before this is over.
Cheerleader from Heroes. There we go.
The hot chick.
Yeah, they kept lingering on her too long with the camera. Like, they were trying to force that was a thing, when the people who were actually the villains, they wouldn't linger as long. So that took her off my suspect list early. As soon as she showed up, I was like, "No, you know, they're trying to force this down our throats."
I mostly just sat back and thought, wait, if she was fired from the FBI, how does she still have access to, you know, phone positioning in the van and everything? It's like, I'm pretty sure, unless she stole a freaking van from the FBI before she left.
Hackers.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think you could get that.
I think the theoretical implication there is that the detective is lying to them about that.
Yeah.
That would be the only way that makes sense for the record.
No, that's the thing, is that, yeah, he was lying, but that was my red flag. That was like, wait, that doesn't make sense, because again, they're trying to make Kirby into a red herring, because the detective is trying to get them to think that, and I'm like, but that makes no sense. So that immediately says, wait, why would he say it? Oh, because he's lying.
Yeah. So, to piggyback on something Dorian said, like, this is a franchise that is sorely lacking in creativity with its violence. And I think that's the fact that we get a couple of sequences here that deviate from the norm actually makes the kind of blandness of the rest of it stand out even more. I mean, the bodega sequence is probably my favorite thing in this movie. There's some genuine tension there. There's, again, him using a shotgun, which adds a different level of menace to what's happening. I mean, the entire setup for that is quite well done. He comes in, somebody gets in his face, and because this person doesn't realize we're immediately dealing with life or death stakes, he tries to posture a little bit,
He assumes this is just some jackass in a Halloween costume.
Yeah, which is not an unfair assumption, and then immediately gets stabbed.
Well, because Ghostface had already said that he's going to kill both Sam and Tara and anyone who gets in his way. And very shortly after that, he, you know, keeps that promise.
And then you have the bodega owner who has the gun, not out of the realm of possibilities, especially in New York. But when he tries to help the girls and get his keys, he, you know, Ghostface gets the better of him and kills him. And then it's like, and now I have a shotgun. Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah. And going back to what we mentioned earlier, the therapist kill was done by the cop because he was the only one that knew her alibi, that she was at her therapist. So when he kills the therapist and steals her record, she no longer has an alibi, so they can frame her even more. And they can release and release her therapy records and everything that she says, release it online to frame her even more. So that's where I got that from and took that into account because, you know, they was behind the whole conspiracy theory online. So being able to release her therapy.
The Woodsboro Truther movement.
Yeah.
Woodsboro social justice warrior.
Yeah. Southern Woodsboro Southern Justice.
And actually, yes, really quick, going back to the bodega, Mr. Winfrey, one of the things I really liked about it was the claustrophobia of it. In so many horror movies, they'll have like a chase in a supermarket, but it's, you know, it's so big. This was so tiny that that actually did add to the tension. And I agree, that was probably one of the best sequences of the movie. And again, simply because of, you know, now he's got a gun, which, you know, is, you know, in the Scream movies, if you have seen them, which, by the way, very quickly to the audience, if you haven't seen any Scream movies, don't start with this one. You need to go back if you're going to watch this one and watch all of them, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that you're going to have to lean over to the person who has seen all of them and go, what is happening?
And again, we apologize that you're going to have to sit through Scream 3 and Scream 4.
I like Scream 4.
Get drunk for those two, crash out for the night, start the next day with Scream 5, then go see Scream 6. You know. But yeah, no, I lost my train of thought there. The guns usually never come out until like the third act of all the Scream movies. So bringing it in one in our first big confrontation with the two main characters was daring, and I thought again with the claustrophobia of the bodega really amped that tension to a very entertaining level.
So who do you think that who do you think was behind the mask in that?
Oh, it was the detective, definitely.
That's who I think because of the way he handled the gun and everything.
Well, I think it also doesn't make sense that Quinn or Ethan could have gotten out of they were both in the apartment. I don't think it could have made sense for them to get out of the apartment and go chase after them that quickly without one of the other people in there saying, where the hell are they going?
Well, Quinn could have because she would have kept her door locked and went out the other access door, and because they're attacked from the alleyway as they're walking, because they're because he says you got to watch your back, your sister needs to watch her back, and then, you know, jumps out of the alleyway. And how awesome was it to see that Flash Thompson has now become a mass murderer?
Oh, good. I'm not the only one who made that joke when I saw this.
You're going to have to help me out there.
It's the kid who played Flash Thompson in the recent Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, is the first Ghostface.
Oh, okay. Oh, right, the guy who dies right away. Okay.
Yeah, the one that is trying to continue the movement.
I even
give credit to the opening scene. I mean, first of all, Samara Weaving is always a lot of fun.
Look, we gave her all kinds of praise for Ready or Not. She's she doesn't get a lot to do here, but, you know, kind of like Drew Barrymore does in the original, she maximizes the time that she does have and, you know, again, makes the most of it and is a very memorable first victim.
I just like the idea of the fake start, the fake out, because he kills the professor and then he takes the mask off and we see his face and the whole audience is just going to go, wait. We're not supposed to know who the killer is. What's going on? I thought that was actually a really clever way to start the movie.
Yeah, it sets you off in a direction of thinking, are they going to play this less of a whodunit this time and literally have this person right next to our lead while
yeah.
screaming at the screen, you know, get away from him. No, don't go in there with him.
Yeah, especially when it shows him walking back and he passes Jenna Ortega and they have that brief interaction and you're like, is he going to be in this friend group and he's going to be manipulating it from the inside? Which, what we kind of got, but not from the aspect that they let us down to start the movie.
I mean, in fairness, I think that kind of inversion might be the only way they can go forward with this franchise and do something interesting with it. Is if you do just follow the killer, and again, you kind of have to, you almost have to do like a Leslie Vernon thing, where you follow the killer and the trials and tribulations of this guy trying to set up his murders.
That, I think that would be an actually interesting concept to have, to like have like that first person POV four parts of the movie for the next one, and then have the reveal of like how they're seeing things, trying to get to the sisters and kill them and kill the friends around them. But, and also, why are they trying to, we touched on this, why are they trying to remake are everybody's favorite characters from the original with less interesting characters? We touched on that earlier. You know, we have the new Randy. We have the new Dewey that obviously can't be killed because he's superhuman.
Until the fifth
you have one. The new Sydney.
Yeah, because Neve Campbell said, you're not paying me enough for this.
Yeah, I can't get paid enough for a cameo.
Well, she's not wrong. They after everything she's been through with the franchise, apparently they really did lowball her an amount, and she was just like, beg your pardon?
Well, they didn't want her. They wanted to shift the focus away from her, so they only wanted her for a cameo. That's why they lowballed her. She was only supposed to be in the movie for like 5 minutes. And she said, either pay me more and put me in the movie more, or I don't want to do it at all. And they're like, okay, happy trails.
I think they handled her absence very well, considering,
yeah,
you know, the whole, she deserves her happy ending. Because, and I know this is going to sound like I'm getting off the highway, but stay with me. One of the complaints people had about the Dead Space horror video games was after 2, when we got to Dead Space 3, and we're still with Isaac Clarke as our lead, the terror has kind of gone down. You know, he has faced this now 2 times yeah. before that, you know, it's not as scary anymore because he knows what he's doing, you know. So at a certain point, you do have to let that, you know, that Nancy Thompson or, you know, Laurie Strode or, you know, whoever, you know, pick your final girl heel here for a franchise, go on their way and have that happy ending. Because after a while, it's like, okay, well, hell, we could use the Alien franchise, you know, at a certain point. You know, Ripley just becomes superhuman, no pun intended for Alien Resurrection. But, you know, it's not, the stakes aren't as high because it's like, we've seen her do this so many times. And
yeah, like you're saying, the tension isn't there any longer. So yeah, I get that.
So I agree that it was time for, you know, Sydney Prescott to have her happy ending. It would have been nice to see the happy ending, you know, and maybe yeah. have her like, with her family, it's, you know, they're talking about it on the news, and, you know, we, you know, get this push in close up on her of like her thinking, you know, deeply, and then just like turn the TV off and walking away. And if you wanted your, you know, moment at the end, her coming in or her finding a way in and just, you know, blowing away Ghostface, you know, or helping out in some way, you know, could have been interesting, but it wasn't necessary.
And I think my other, you mentioned, you know, we've got less interesting characters here. I think this is one of my big problems with this movie. You basically have to have 2 characters to fill the role that Sydney did in as a singular character. You've got Sam, who actually handles the physical part of what's required of this a lot better than Jenna Ortega does. But everything outside of once the blood starts flowing, Tara, that's where Tara shines. Like, she's good at being a regular person. She's really good at selling, some of the interpersonal conflict, at selling how much she cares about the people around her. Whereas with Sam, a lot of that stuff is very, very stilted. It's very, there's not a lot going on there until the physicality becomes more necessary. Then, again, that's where that actress starts to shine. So you've got two people trying to do the same thing that Neve Campbell did solo, and it creates a bit of disconnect, not only within those two characters, but the entire sub bit about, Sam being haunted by visions and hallucinations of Skeet Ulrich is just, it's such a giant nothing. Like
I agree. I really wanted them to go further with that. That was one thing I liked out of five was, once we find out, it's her dad, and she's, keeps seeing him. I wanted them to take the next step in this movie and really just, crank her insanity. You can still have General Ortega being the I want a normal life person, much like Neve Campbell has done in the previous films. But really pushing Sam to the brink of her sanity after all this. And I think it would have been interesting and made the character more three-dimensional if they had made it to a point where she keeps having the visions of Skeet Ulrich, and she starts, and we start questioning too, is everything we saw in five real, or is what we witnessed what she believes happened due to psychological dissociation or something like that?
See, I would have liked to see her, like, you could have done this real easy in that final kill scene where she's got the cop down and killing him. Having Jenna Ortega standing there and her just go off the deep end and just, instead of stopping, just continue to butcher this guy. And thus creating a bigger rift between those two that can she have Jenna Ortega's character looking at it going, okay, you took care of it, but you took it a step too far. And it plays back into where she's in the therapy saying, it felt good. And, and just kind of play on that and extend that to where, like, she is giving into this and she did have a psychological break and not go for the happy ending, go for the her having, instead of her walking away, instead of the older sister walking away, the younger sister kind of walks away from her saying, you need to seek, you need to get help. You've taken it too far. And that would be where you would pick up on the next movie, and not have them together, have them having to be forced together and deal with each other again, knowing with Jenna Ortega, knowing that there's something seriously wrong with her sister, that she's finally given in to this theory that she it's in her blood. And I think that would have been a good storyline to weave into the next movie.
Yeah,
I
that
would agree.
there's really not a hook for this for the next one that comes out of this, and I think that's one of the things it needed was, it needed a little more tension between the sisters. It needed a little bit more of, Sam being just a little bit more deranged. We need a little.
Unhinged.
I would have settled for a minor bit, like a minor subplot where maybe we start questioning whether or not, Sam is in fact killing people. And it's not there. And especially in a franchise that is built on being this meta-aware, this kind of, again, bordering on satire at times, you need something new to kind of keep things going. And the Scream franchise, it still provides fun. There's still some good comedy moments. You get some decent kills here and there. But it does feel like it's running out of steam just a little bit at this point. Like there's not a big oomph behind it.
Yeah,
And
where are we going next?
yeah. I
This
mean the
movie did, however, have a couple of ideas of things that the directors should focus on for the next installment. Again, we liked what they did with this fake out opener. We love the scene in the bodega. We love the creative kill with Annika. There's a lot, like I said, there are a handful of things in this movie that we really did enjoy, and hopefully the directors will take note of that and say, okay, this was what was positive. let's, you know, use that as our guide.
I honestly think that the next movie, if they are going to do one, they should really wrap it up here.
Yeah.
I would not be adverse. And Paramount, if you want this idea, give me a call. To bringing in Neve Campbell and or Gale or a previous character, much like they did with Hayden Panettiere, and making it the just wipe the slate scene. You know, we find out one of our people from the past has gone nuts. Even if it is, you know, Sidney Prescott is now Ghostface because she's just tired of it. So she's going to wipe
the up. The only way for me to get on with my life in a peaceful manner is to kill all of you.
Yeah, no more memories of this. There's no one left standing. I'm going to kill myself at the end of it, and then we're done. You know, which obviously would be foiled in some way, but it would be an interesting, again, psychological juxtaposition of...
I'm so tired of being in this franchise. The franchise fatigue is set in. What if I have to kill everything and then myself to get out of it, I will.
What if they did Sam like actually having a break, thinking that the only way to, you know, kind of building on that, the only way to break this cycle is to kill Sydney, and it becomes Sam versus Sydney.
Yeah, something that was kind of where I was down. Because I think that would. It would wrap it up in a good way, because that's, again, if you're satiring everything from a franchise, usually by the time we've hit 7, we really should be done.
Yeah.
Like Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think they only got to 6 before like Freddy vs. Jason and all that jazz. But it was like, that would be the thing to satire, is why does nobody know how to end?
Yeah,
that's always been
and that would go back to the whole original basis of Scream is being meta and kind of playing on the tropes. Mm-hmm. To going on this, you know, and we see this, you know, the Fast and Furious franchise, Scream, and a lot of other franchises, they just see this cash grab and they keep wanting to make more, yet they're kind of losing their audience along the way. A prime example is, you know, the Walking Dead TV series. It was really hot, and then toward the end, nobody cared.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that would really just, I mean, wrapping it up. I'm a huge Wes Craven fan, so, I mean, 5 was hard for me. I really appreciated it. Again, they dedicated it to him, but there's these two directors did very well. And for everyone listening, I personally enjoyed this movie. I'd go back and see it again. I will definitely buy it because I own all the other Scream movies. But this is a fun movie. You're not going to walk away being like, I feel wizened. I've been given wisdom, so I feel wizened. You know, you're not going to walk away with that. It's not, you know, going to be like the level of like Exorcist or Hereditary, you know, level movies. But it is a fun, it's much like Friday the 13th, which, you know, this is satirizing as well. And actually, no one's brought this up. Since we talked about Jason Takes Manhattan, there's literally a TV playing Jason Takes Manhattan in the background. Keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, Flash Thompson was watching that after he killed the professor.
Right. And so, yeah, it's this movie is much like Friday the 13th and, you know, other slasher films. It's the fast food of horror. You know, we know it's you know, it's like McDonald's and stuff like that. We know it's not good for us, but, you know, sometimes it's the only thing
it's
there.
Comfortable.
It's kind of, yeah, there's a comfortability to it, which I know sounds weird. We're talking about someone, you know, stabbing the crap out of like everyone. It's comfortable, you know.
It's comfortable. Well, it is. We like it. We like this kind of, we like this level of violence, comfort violence.
Yeah,
it's a new term.
It's recognizable. We know we're getting.
It's my emotional support knife.
Right.
Yeah.
And now it's been spoken into the universe. Brace yourselves, here it comes. But no,
yeah, I like the idea. He's my emotional support serial killer.
There you go, Robert. Go ahead and say to the unpaid intern.
You're welcome.
But no, this one of the things I liked about this movie and what it satirized, because each film has obviously satirized something. This one satirized obsession, and not just, you know, obsession with, you know, a killer and, like, you know, the son who died in the previous one. But on an overall level, it's the obsession of never ending anything, just keep going on. And also satirizing a very serious problem that we have today in the world, which is character assassination. There's even a line that what's his face? Can't remember his name now. Randy Quaid.
Not Randy Quaid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Discount Randy Quaid. Ethan. Yeah. Who says it's like, it's not just good enough to murder someone. You have to assassinate their character. You have to destroy them. And that, I thought, I mean, it came in a little late, so we didn't have time to really, you know, chew on it a lot, you know, but I thought that was interesting to satirize, considering that all the time now.
I kind of wish they'd brought that concept out earlier.
Agreed.
Because, you know, those of us that deal with long-term franchises, like, anytime they do try to pick up, like, no, we can't just move on. We have to make everything that came before us look worse and try to make the audience feel bad for having liked what came before it. Now, please like this new thing.
And now in the next scene, we will play Red Right Hand, which we played in the first movie. Actually, I think they played in all of them.
That song has been in every movie. It's a good song.
It wasn't in 4, was it?
Yes, it was.
Was it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it shows up and everything, which is funny because when I think Red Right Hand, I don't think Scream. I think Hellboy. Right? Like,
yeah, you and me both, man.
But no, and it's kind of... Go ahead, Dorian. My bad.
No, you go first. You go first.
I was going to say, it's also, we got the same voice actor, the same guy that's doing Ghostface's voice from the original that has done it in every movie. And I think that's, you know, going back to where we were saying our comfort food, you know, our emotional support knife and everything. We know that voice. That voice is synonymous with what we're expecting. I mean, the original Scream revitalized the horror genre when it came out. Horror was not doing great at that time. It gave new life to the genre, and it kickstarted a whole new wave of horror that we're in now. But it's comfortable knowing that when you hear that voice, it's the same guy. It's an homage to Wes Craven, and still yet. And it's just, it's there. It's soothing. It's when you hear, what's your favorite scary movie? It just sucks you in for the nostalgia.
Yeah, nicely done, Mojo Jojo.
Yeah, that really surprised me. That I did not know that till I was looking it up, that he also voiced Mojo Jojo.
Yeah, Roger Jackson, great voice actor. Really great. Done a lot.
That was a really great part of the end when, you know, it's obvious that Sam has, you know, is going to use the Ghostface thing to take out the cop. And it's like that was good writing because they built it up enough as she's talking. You know, I just have one question.
Hold on.
Oh, go ahead.
I am correct. It was not in Scream 4. It is the only Scream movie. I thought that was a good bit of knowledge because I don't remember it. But yeah, it's been in every movie except for Scream 4.
Oh, I hate to admit it, I don't specifically remember. I was reading a few things on IMDb trivia about the actors. I just wanted a few little talking points, and it said for Scream 6 that song has been in every Scream movie. So I was just going off of that.
Yeah, I'm on their website, and it says featured in every. First three films in the Scream franchise and the fifth installment of the series, also named Scream, as well as the sixth installment. Scream 4 stands as the only film in the franchise not to feature the song.
No, okay. I admit I was wrong. Nicely done on the research.
I actually done research. Isn't that amazing? Don't tell Mark because he'll expect it out of me from now on.
Don't worry. No one's watching.
Yeah. No, everybody that listens is actually on the show. Would listen to the shows actually on the show tonight.
So again, last things here. I think you hit the nail on the head, Dorian. That 7 needs to be like the struggle to actually conclude something these days, and not just keep on going and keep on going and keep on going. So I'm curious to see how they might try to do it. Again, this is a franchise that it's got highs and lows, but when it runs out of steam at various points, it becomes very obvious. And this one's, again, this is a fine enough movie. I'm not knocking it in that respect, but there's not a lot of impetus behind it. There's not a ton of momentum. And I'm not sure what they'll do for 7, but they need to look at, again, how are we going to end this rather than how are we going to continue to drag this out? So, all right. Any final thoughts from anybody, or I believe we're ready to move on because we've hit the hour mark.
Yeah, I'm good.
I suggest people see it. It's a great film. I think the Scream franchise as a whole, as we've already said, you know, is a comfort thing. You know, there's some issues with it, obviously, but as a filmmaker myself, nobody's perfect. The one thing I will wrap up with, and I do have a little surprise for the audience or anyone who's watching.
If you put on a ghost face mask, I swear to God, Dorian.
There was something, at least where I went to see it at the Screenland Armor. There was a thing with Jenna Ortega and Courtney Cox at the start. It was like, you know, hey, welcome. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like, you've chosen to see it in the movie theater the way it was supposed to be seen. And I know this is selfish as, again, a filmmaker, but everyone out there watching, I know some of us are still concerned about COVID, and it is an issue that we need to be very safe with, but for all the people who work in film and the entertainment industry, from the grips to the directors, the writers, everyone, if you can, if you're interested to go see a movie, go see it in theaters. There's still the experience of the theater that cannot be matched. I mean, without a home theater system, but you can't be matched on a laptop or on an iPad. And when we make movies, obviously we make them for you guys. We make them for the audience. That's our job. We want to entertain you. So if you can, you know, if health permitting and, you know, money obviously permitting, because I know we're all not shooting dollar bills out of our ears, but go see the movies in theaters. Definitely go see this in theaters if you can. The movie industry is still going strong, and movie theaters are something that we can't – I really don't believe we should lose. It's an experience that even if we're sitting there quietly brings people together. So go out, support your local theater, find some small ones and support them, because it's always that experience that can't be beat on, you know, on just at home.
All right, well said. All right, gentlemen, shall we move on to discussing Demone?
I'm always down to talk the green.
Money, 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 money.
You know, we don't use that sound clip anymore. We don't want to get flagged on YouTube.
We got DMCA'd more than once for that one, but that we did used to have the Shane McMahon intro as our intro clip for the money.
Yeah, we got flagged for that too.
Mark gets flagged for a lot of stuff, and he gives me hell.
Dorian, you're uninvited to my birthday party.
For those listening, Dorian has in fact put on a ghost face mask.
Because of course he did. Moving on.
We're in the money. We're in the money.
All right. Here we go. So, no surprise, Scream 6 took the box offices this last weekend. So 44.
For the record, where we currently stand, on a budget of 33 to 35 million. Which might actually shoot on the low side, all things considered. I imagine 40 is closer, but it has pulled in 70.7 million as of today. This thing is almost certainly going to wind up profitable. So Paramount doing solid work.
Yeah. Do I need to enlarge the screen, by the way, guys? Can you read it okay?
You're good.
Okay. I can never tell when I import this thing if it's big enough for you guys or not. All right. Creed 3 dropped from number 1 to number 2. Doing really freaking good.
Only 53% drop. That's not terrible. I mean,
yeah, that's not a bad drop. That's about average.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what you usually expect. And most people seem to be lukewarm to favorable, like mild favorable on Creed 3. So there's that.
Cocaine Bear's not ruling the box office? What?
We are very depressed about that.
That's a sore subject.
Oh,
Dorian, you know better than to bring that up around Jason. He hasn't gotten over that yet.
Yeah, I'm still hurt. And
I feel like in the hands of a better director, it would have been we would have been okay.
All right, also opening this last weekend was 65, ooh, which that's a pathetic opening if I ever saw one for an action movie. Sorry, opening Adam Driver.
Opening at number 3 with a total of 12.3 million.
Well, but I mean, it was going up against Scream, so it wasn't favorable.
When you can't, dude, when you're pulling in less than half of what Creed 3 did in its second week, you got a problem.
When you're doing a dinosaur movie and you're pulling in that low, you got a problem. Dinosaurs usually equal big money.
More dinosaurs.
Always.
Yeah. Okay, Ant-Man.
Speaking of disaster plummets.
You feel good about that?
I do. I like watching things burn.
You and Pat. Okay, Ant-Man the Wasp Quantumania went from 2 to 4. Ooh. That has been seeing a pretty substantial drop. Going from number 3 to number 5. Teasley's favorite movie.
Yes.
Cocaine Bear.
I love Cocaine Bear.
Also opening up this weekend was Champions, which I actually have never even heard of.
It is a Woody Harrelson-led comedy.
About special education basketball, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Number 5 and number 7, Jesus Revolution.
That made pretty much what it's going to make. You know, it had a decent showing for what it was.
Yeah. The churches can only rent out the theaters for so long. Number 6 to number 8, Avatar, the Tech Demonstration. Number 8 to number 9, Puss in Boots, Last Wish. That is, I am kind of shocked that's still in theaters. That, I mean, that was a good movie, but that is still really
it's
raking
been
it
out
in.
There for a while.
Yeah. Number 7 dropped to number 10, Operation Fortune. Guy Ritchie's latest foray. Coming up from 27 up to number 11, The Quiet Girl.
Got its wide release.
Mm-hmm. And number 18 to number 12, Everything Everywhere All at Once. We knew that was going.
Oscar.
Yeah, we knew that was going to jump up. Not only, I mean, well, this was the weekend that the Oscars came out, but yeah. Let's face it, we all knew that this was going to be the movie that won.
Oh, yeah.
Your post-Oscar bump.
Yeah, honestly, I think it was one of the best choices because it was really the only film, in my opinion, that didn't feel like Oscar bait that was on that list.
We did a...
This is one of the only movies in the last, like, 3 to 5 years that's played around with the medium of cinema in ways that should be rewarded like this. And I love that movie.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. We did a Oscars preview show a couple of weeks ago. Robert, it was you, me, and Mark. We all agreed that we predicted Everything Everywhere All at Once to win. I think our backups were, you guys said the Banshees of Inisherin.
Yeah.
I said The Fablemans solely because it won the Golden Globe, so I thought that put it a little higher for a backup. Either way, our first pick was all correct. Number 14, jumped to number 13. That was the 2023 Oscar-nominated short films. From number 10 to number 14, 80 for Brady. No thanks. Number 11, number 15, A Man Called Otto. Jumping up from 21 to 16, Women Talk.
Someone again, trying to kill themselves.
Again, Oscar bump. That won actually for Best Adapted Screenplay, so congrats.
That's all I have to say about that.
Number 17, wide release, Southern Gospel. Again, not familiar with that. Dropping from number 9 to number 18, Magic Mike's Last Dance.
That's 83%. Wow.
Looks like Channing Tatum's abs can't save us anymore.
He didn't get on enough steroids for the role. It's on him.
He's getting ready for Gambit.
Yeah, sure he is.
No.
All right. Number 13 to number 19, The Missing, or just Missing, and coming up from 22 to 20, The Amazing Maurice. Again, we're also seeing a increase in other movies that got a re-release because of the Oscars, like The Whale, Tar, Triangle of Sadness, The Banshees of Inisherin, and so on and so forth.
Other debuts look like Unwelcome would have been the only other one.
Mm-hmm. So right now, Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania is still the number one movie in the world. Not surprising. It's a wide release Disney film.
No. That's not the oof.
What's the oof?
The oof is that, 3 to 4 weeks in, its worldwide total hasn't hit 500 million?
Yeah.
That's the oof.
Okay, that is a fair oof. Yeah. So, number 2, Creed 3. Number 3, I don't even know how to pronounce
Pantheon.
I don't think that's Pantheon. Is it? I think it's, isn't it Pathan? Pathan?
We'll go with Pantheon.
I believe the A is long. So that'd be Pathan.
That's what she said.
No, the A wouldn't be long. Wrong letter. A's aren't long. A's are thick.
That's also what she said.
D's are long.
Hang on a second. I'm going to talk with Mark about rearranging these sound clips because I get tired that the majority of my sound clips are up top, and the sound clips that I need to use when you guys, you know, say stupid shit are all the way at the bottom. So by the time you said something, I'm like, damn it, I need another 10 seconds to find the damn clip.
Mark has them organized just how he likes them, and that's all that there is to it.
Yeah, well,
head up next time, like 5 seconds. Stupid joke.
Stupid joke incoming in 5, 4, 3.
Oh, you know that when that softball went up in the air, you should have been prepared.
Fair enough. Number 4, Chebby, my fluffy friend.
I have no idea what that is.
Me and
I don't
no want
to know what that is. I have no.
I kind of do actually.
Okay, hang on. I'm Googling. I am Googling.
I'll look. You keep going. Hang on,
okay. Now, Scream 6 is currently sitting at number 5, just above Cocaine Bear. Sorry, Jason.
I know. But, heartbreaking.
But at least Cocaine Bear is beating the Titanic 25th year anniversary because, like I said before, not like James Cameron needs more money.
Apparently, this is a Chebby, My Fluffy Friend is a Russian film.
Really?
Yes. The brief synopsis here is a fun-loving furry animal living in an orange grove finds itself in a quiet seaside town where he meets an unsociable old gardener, a boy who can't speak, and his chocolate-making mother, their fashionista aunt, and her granddaughter. And so, yeah, this is like a whimsical...
It's kind of like a hybrid animation, looks like.
Little bit, yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's our feel-good Russian movie of the year, I suppose. They're allowed one every 10 years or so, I believe.
Well, it's nice to have something feel-good come out of Russia. Okay, number 8, Magic Mike's Last Dance. Number 9, Knock at the Cabin. And number 10, Plane. All right, so...
Again, Ant-Man and the Wasp not cracking the 500 million mark thus far. That's kind of the big... That's your big flashing warning light, Disney. Like, we've had, about a month of this?
Yeah, almost coming up on it.
And you haven't hit the mark. This got a China release, too. Like, you're closer than not to the end of your 45-day window... And you haven't hit 500 million.
All right. Well, next weekend we got Shazam.
Break glass in case of emergency.
I shudder to think what's inside the glass. All right. So coming next week, we got Shazam, Fury of the Gods.
That's trending for about 35 to 40 million. 40, somewhere in that range.
I think that's what I said. I think it's tracking the 35 million, around the 35 million range.
Not great, but not awful.
Yeah, so what do you guys think? Do you think Screen 6 will hold it over next weekend, or do you think it's going to succumb to Fury of the Gods?
Shazam probably edges it out.
Yeah, I think it's going to be close, but I think Shazam edges it.
All right, well, the big release after that is March 24th, John Wick, Chapter 4.
You guys seen the runtime on that?
We were just talking about that.
Almost 3 hours.
Hours and 50 minutes.
Why can't Hollywood just make an hour and a half movie? I'm tired of watching long films.
The first one is.
Cocaine Bear was a good tight 90 minutes.
Dorian, you missed it. We talked when we did the Oscar predictions. We talked about the running length of Triangle of Sadness and Tard. We just kept whining. It's like, why are all these movies so long? It's so annoying.
Like Lord of the Rings, it makes sense, but and I know this is a couple years old, but you know, why is It Chapter 2 almost 3 hours?
You're not wrong.
Return of the City
Yeah, we discussed that, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. right up there with what the hell happened to your CGI budget, people.
That too.
All right, so that's our predictions. Is that we to say Shazam is going to knock Scream 2 down, or sorry, Scream 6 down to number 2.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
All right. What do you think, Doran? We don't usually have somebody or guests who make predictions like this. What do you think?
I'm going to have to agree that Shazam is going to knock Scream down simply because Shazam is the one really family-friendly DC movie that, you know, Warner Brothers has. Shazam, the first Shazam did very well simply based on the fact that it was more upbeat, more happy, even just in the coloring of the film. It wasn't the drabness that we'd had in obviously Batman films, but that also spilled over into the Superman films we've had to this point. So I think a lot of people will be taking, you know, their kids to see Shazam, because as we already pointed out, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania has been out, you know, for over a month. So this will be the next big superhero movie to take, you know, take your kids to. So yeah, I of the big things that are coming out, that will take the top spot. And as long as it doesn't suck, we'll probably stay there for a good 2 to 3 weeks, I would say.
That actually is an interesting point. We're not getting a lot of family-friendly films out right now. I mean, like I said, we got Shazam coming out next week, but after that is John Wick. So, you know, I don't see a lot of parents taking their kids to that.
I think the next family after Shazam is Mario?
Yeah. Unless Mario's you count Dungeons and Dragons as family-friendly.
I think it's going to be a surprise. I think that's going to do a way better than what people believe.
Oh, I have no doubt that that's going to do really well. We will be reviewing that, plug, on an upcoming Damn You Hollywood. We're looking forward to that. We actually have a special guest joining us who's a regular here on the Rattlesnake and Broadcasting Network, but does not come on Damn You Hollywood that often. But he kind of insisted because Dungeons & Dragons is his thing. I think you two know who I'm talking about.
It's Pat, isn't it?
I was going to say Evan. No, it's Ronnie Adams. We all know it's Ronnie.
It's Pat.
I could not see Pat playing Dungeons and Dragons if his life depended on it.
He actually...
He actually does.
He does.
Yeah,
he does. So, I think you guys said that so on key together. It was hilarious. All right. Well, we got our predictions in. So let's move on to the next thing.
Are you ready? No! I said, are you ready?
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
All right, right now, Scream 6 is sitting at a 77% on the tomato meter with a 92% audience score. That's critics' right. consensus says certain aspects of horror's most murderously meta franchise may be going stale, but a change of setting and some inventive set pieces help keep Scream 6 reasonably sharp.
That's about where we landed.
Yeah, I would say it's pretty accurate. All right, let's go see if we can find some of our favorite people to pick on, shall we?
It's always a good time.
Yeah, see, this is the thing I always laugh about, is that normally, if it's a movie we despise, we look for the stupidly positive. It's a movie that we absolutely loved, we look for the stupidly negative. When we're kind of in the middle on this, there's nothing really to do except to look for the people that we make fun of on a regular basis. Like this guy, Bob Grimm from Reno News and Review, saying, didn't I see this movie last year?
No, you saw the fifth installment. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you see this last year? Was your screener that early? I mean, if so, kudos, but...
I mean,
possible Time Lord or Doc Brown time traveling.
I like this one from David Sims. There just isn't enough juice behind the stagecraft. The Scream movies have thrived because they've always stayed one step ahead of their source material. But as the franchise grows more bloated, they risk becoming their own punchline.
Again, I think we all wound up more positive than negative, but that was the kind of cautionary thing we all took away from this, was you're skirting a line here, guys.
Wendy Eind from The Observer, top critic. The only notable development just how rapidly a satirical skewering of genre formulas can become thuddingly formulaic.
This isn't... It's not quite as formulaic as she's making it out, but again, not entirely wrong.
Russ Simmons from Mine and Dorian's Hometown. At one point, in this absurd slasher sequel, Scream 6, a stabbing victim says, blank this franchise. I agree.
That's a little harsh.
Yeah.
No, but kind of funny.
So Dorian, go hunt him down.
Get right on that.
All right. Hold on, that one said not enough Gail Weathers.
Wait, which one did?
I think last page.
Yeah, it was last page toward the bottom.
What did I miss? Oh, Dustin Chase from Galveston Daily News. Lots of firsts for the franchise, more blood and gore, but still not enough Gail Weathers.
I assume that this guy runs at least one fan account for Courtney Cox on yeah. at least one social media platform.
Because as we were speaking earlier, she has not aged well.
Yeah. Time has not been kind to her.
Yeah.
Wasn't especially kind to Hayden Panettiere either.
Hey, I think she's still beautiful.
Well, she doesn't look too bad, but yeah.
Okay, let me express my issue with, let me be clear. She's not an ugly woman. But everything about her presentation looks very artificial.
Do I need to quote a previous comment, Robert? This man gets no bitches.
I have owned that criticism.
I think the issue with her performance, if there is any, is lies in the direction and possibly the writing, is that they're still trying to play her like super young. Now,
being a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. Now, being in your 30s isn't old. I mean, like, a lot of people are now seeing 50 as the official start of middle age, you know, as medical advancements advance, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, it did seem like she was still kind of playing, you know, a version of her character, obviously, from Scream 4, but also a little bit of, like, what Heroes could have been if it kept going, you know?
Yeah.
Became an FBI agent, and now we're hunting Siler 2.0.
So
life ends at 38.
So Scream 4 came out in 2011. So let's take a look at this. So that would have been 11 years.
12.
Well, it was early. It was set early in the school year, basically, quote unquote, because it was around Halloween. So we haven't hit the 12 mark yet. So, and she says she's 30 in this film. So was she like 19 in high school?
Well, she was in college for 4, right?
They're in high school, aren't they?
Right. Sorry, I'm half confusing her with the one. Is it 3 or 4 that opens with the sorority house slaughter? I can't remember.
That's 3. Sarah Michelle Gellar, is that who you're?
Yeah. Okay.
I thought Sarah Michelle Gellar died in 2.
No,
she did.
No.
But oh, wait, no, she didn't. Never mind. Sorry. Yeah,
she's not in 2.
Right now, I'm confused.
Yeah, I'm trying to look, see how it's set up, because I'm thinking they're in high school in 4.
Hang on, folks. We're actually confusing ourselves.
That's not hard to do.
What happens when you don't have a super fan with all the knowledge off the top of their head easily at your disposal?
Dorian, I thought that was your job.
Sarah Michelle Gellar is in Scream 2.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, doesn't she die? Is she the opening kill in Scream 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she's not. The opening kill in Scream 2 is Jada Pinkett Smith.
Right.
No, but in Stab.
Yeah.
We're talking about in Stab.
Oh, the movie. Okay, no wonder we're getting confused.
Movie within the movie. Where's our Inception bomb?
Yeah.
Okay, you guys are going to love this from Carla Renata, the curvy film critic. Women in this franchise are not wilting flowers waiting for someone to rescue them, especially Courtney Cox, Hayden Panettiere, Jenny Ortega, and Melissa Barrera are giving Ghostface a run for his money and then some.
This is your first time watching a Scream movie, isn't it?
Yeah. You haven't seen the franchise, right?
Like, that's...
That's literally...
That's always been the case.
Yeah. That's literally the case of, like, I'd say 75% of slasher movies.
Slashers in general, but then this franchise in particular, like, a big part of the fun of some of the earlier ones is watching Ghostface bump like Shawn Michaels when being hit with accoutrements by Nev Campbell.
I like the misrepresentation of people getting stabbed in the head. Hardly anybody gets stabbed in the head. They all get stabbed in the stomach.
And I think maybe what that reviewer was pointing out is that, especially in some of the earlier ones, Courtney Cox and Neve Campbell were really the only strong ones we had. In this one, we have a pretty full-rounded, strong female cast. Whereas before, you know, we had a lot of ones that, you know, were the dumb, you know, college bimbo, or, you know, all the archetypes that again is making fun of. She might be just pointing out that this time everybody seems to have stepped up to the plate, and nobody is really our, you know, and help, I broke a heel, and now I'm going to trip over something that's not actually there, and I'm dead.
All right, well, here's one of our regulars, Mr. Jeffrey Harris, 411 Mania.
For another show.
While Scream 6 opens with a strong start, the film fails to maintain that level of quality through the rest of the viewing experience. The script stretches the repetitive tropes of this franchise to their breaking point.
Okay, for the record, hold on, scrolling for a sec.
Not scrolling.
Yeah, okay. The original score Jeff gave this is a 4.5. This listed as being 4.5 out of 5. That is not accurate, because I rate stuff on 411 Mania. We go to 10. So he's 4.5 out of 10. If you're wondering why the slash there still looks like a splat, like that's kind of erroneously listed. And for the record, again, Jeff was a little bit more negative on this than I was. As a general rule, he's not the biggest horror fan in the world, but he's not whistling Dixie when he talks about some of the repetition here.
No, Jeff's. I tend to kind of agree with a lot of Jeff's take. He reviews basically through the same prism as I do. Kind of more positive for me on this than he was. But yeah, I mean, he hits a lot of the points there.
All right. Permission to scroll again?
Mm-hmm. You're good.
Okay.
That was just a bookkeeping thing in case anyone was curious. Like, wait, he gave it 4.5 out of 5 and it still comes up as a splat? No, that's out of 10.
Fair enough. I've been watching this guy a lot, Jeremy Johns. I really like his reviews. The movie expands as a sequel should, but the heart and soul of Scream doesn't get lost in that expansion.
I'm going to disagree just a little bit there. Yeah. Like, this movie is missing just a little bit of the... It misses a little bit of heart. Like, I don't mean that you need Neve Campbell specifically, but you don't have an adequate replacement for her role in the narrative either.
And I think they're trying too hard to replace Randy. I think that they're really trying too hard to replace him with his niece.
Mm-hmm. I mean, someone being a walking film student with being able to quote IMDb via verbatim from memory has always been part of the film franchise. But I agree that Mindy's a fun character, but I don't really think we have enough of her, of a character of her, other than she is Randy reincarnated.
I mean, if she died here, what would have been lost?
Exposition.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say. Exposition dumps.
Yeah, which you can find other places. Like, she's not... There's not a lot there. Like, she's actually more of a character than her cardboard cutout girlfriend, who was not a character at all.
No, she just gets the best death in the whole movie.
She really does, and hats off to her. Like, she sells that, and... Again, like, for the next one, the other thing I really want out of this franchise, I want some more inventive kills. I would really like that.
Well, like I said, it's one of the things we mentioned. We want to see the whole thing with the shotgun and the ladder. We want to see more of Like Rose McGowan's death in the first Scream movie. That was an inventive kill.
Yeah.
I
doggy door in the garage door.
Yeah, yeah. I also like, I mean, similar vein, like killer. I liked when Ghostface stabbed Courtney Cox with the shard of glass.
Like, yeah.
Was a good jump. I'll admit, that was a jump scare that worked. I kind of came out of my seat on that one.
That was a better jump scare than Ethan's like last gasp at the end.
Yeah, because how would he have that? That, I mean, from a medical standpoint, that is not really plausible. Just like getting stabbed 27 times is not plausible to live. But I digress.
Come on, where's our usual people we make fun of? What is the deal here?
They all reviewed 40 or 62 instead.
65.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah.
Wow, movie's so boring. We can't even remember the number.
I was going to say 61.
Jurassic Kylo.
Bum yeah, bum.
A dinosaur marriage.
The Scarlett Johansson as a T-Rex.
I'd watch it.
A lot of people would. Like I said, if you can't make dinosaurs interesting, you have failed as a filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
This is interesting. Hello? Matt Singer from Screen Crush. Instead of making fun of the rules of its own of other franchises, it might be time for Screen to start breaking some of its own. This kind of goes back to what we were saying. Some of the more inventive kills, the fact that Ghostface is coming after them with a shotgun. We want these things are different, and this is what we want. We need this to keep from getting stale. We need our emotional support knife.
They haven't reached this yet. So when I say the following, understand that I'm not leveling that claim at this movie in particular, but this franchise is. It's closer than it should be to being self-parody. And not in a good way.
It's okay. On that fine line.
Okay, this is one of the things that annoys the hell out of me with Rotten Tomatoes when they clearly don't pick the right line. We got Josh Larson from Larson on Film, and the quote is, "There's an intriguing idea and an incredible sequence in Scream 6." Dot, dot, dot.
That was a very bad pull. It's a very bad poll.
Yeah. And what's cool about the radio silence guys, they said that they wanted to do this. They wanted to go into the darker side of Scream for the last one. But with the unfortunate death of Wes Craven, they wanted to, you know, try to make sure that they paid the homage respectfully for the franchise that they're now taking over. And that's why they went a lot more grittier and darker and kind of off the beaten path from previous Scream movies in this one.
We're seeing a lot of repetition in these reviews. We got Nick Shager from the Daily Beast. The sixth chapter boasts not a single genuinely unnerving jolt, a consequence of tepid writing, as well as the familiarity of Ghostface's tactics, which have long since become their own genre cliches. Again, they're not wrong. We need to see something besides knife in gut.
The other thing that... It's a hallmark of Ghostface as a killer, no matter who's under the mask. But we got to do something more interesting with the phone calls, people.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have them because his taunting and stalking is a big part of the identity of that character. But... Like we need, you got to find some kind of twist on it. There's got to be something a little bit more interesting brought to the fore, because otherwise it just gets a little bit, it's a little bit repetitious.
Mm-hmm.
I'd agree.
All right, I'm going to find one more here for us to talk about. Let's see here. If anyone sees someone they want me to talk about, please say something.
Will do.
Yeah, our usual... I think you're right. I think they all did. Oh, that's the last page.
That's the last one.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I guess most of the people usually do make fun of went to go see 65. All right. I do kind of like what we got here from Jeff Nelson, the showbiz cheat sheet. That's actually kind of a cool name. Scream 6 cranks up the gore, but it lacks the sharp, clever nature of some of the earlier entries. It's an echo chamber of nostalgia that doesn't push itself forward.
Again, a little bit harsh, but they're keying into some very real things about this movie.
All right. So I think that does it for Damn You Hollywood tonight. Let's go ahead and move on to plugs. Mr. Price, as you are our first big guest here, why don't you go ahead and tell us where we can find you and what you're working on?
You can find me on Instagram and at Frikey Pictures, which, you know, that's right down there. Sorry. That's why I don't act. I stay behind the camera. We're working on a lot of stuff. For people out there who are in the Kansas City area, Kansas, Independence, Green Valley, anywhere in there, need photo shoots, events filmed, please reach out to us on Instagram, like again, at Frikey Pictures. Find me on Facebook at Dorian Price, Dorian Price Photography and Videography, rather. Currently working on a commercial that I can't really talk about because the people involved kind of want this to be a surprise, but it is for a major historic institution here in Kansas City. I got a couple short films that we're still plugging away, getting investors for. So, I mean, hey, if anybody wants to send us a whole bunch of money, you know, again, right here, you know, that's Frikey Pictures. But yeah, we're plugging away, taking pictures, watching horror movies, and just surviving.
All right, Mr. Teasley, what do you got coming up?
Speaking of surviving, Jason, what do you got?
I'm right back here tomorrow night as I join the roundtable discussing The Last of Us HBO series.
That's you, me, Jesse, and Andrew Orozco, right?
Yes. I know it's me, you, and Jesse. I don't know if I didn't know anybody else was joining, but yeah, sure, I'll go with it. That's all I got this year. This month, I'm sorry. I'm sure I'm coming back this year if Mark hasn't shunned me by then.
Mark, your pink slip's in the mail somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, along with my payday.
Wait, we're getting paid for this?
That's the joke.
Yeah. No, it's just a candy bar. It's a payday candy bar. That's all they send.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just a payday candy bar. But
we're all allergic to peanuts.
You can also find me over on Mosaic Media on all platforms, Instagram, all your podcasting platforms. We're getting ready to revamp a lot of big NFL moves. We've had the draft combine, and we're preparing for the NFL draft coming up here in a few weeks. So look for a lot of content to be dropping between me and Tyler over on Mosaic Media. It's Mosaic MC on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok.
All right, Mr. Winfrey, where can we find you?
You can find me a few different places. I'm on Twitter. I promise I'm a very benign follow. I will not fill your feed with porn or politics. It's my only promise. I'm at Winfrey MMA there. You can find me over at 411mania.com. I cover mixed martial arts and professional wrestling. AEW's Dark Elevation on Monday. If MLW goes back to Thursdays, I will cover that. But at the moment, they're on Tuesdays, and that doesn't jive with my schedule. So Jeremy Thomas has that, and bless him for it. WWE SmackDown on Friday, and UFC events on Saturdays. This Saturday, earlier start time. The main card starts at, I believe, 2 p.m. Eastern for UFC 286. That is being held live. They're in London for that since the earlier start time. So I will be covering that. If you want a full preview of that event, as well as weekly updates on results, fight technique breakdowns, and news in the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts, you can find me hosting the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, whatever your platform of choice is, you can find me over there talking combat sports in the wider world. And yeah, back here next week for Shazam! Fury of the Gods, wherein Mark and I will debate the merits of blue humor aimed at children, I'm fairly sure.
All right. I will be joining you guys to talk Shazam Fury of the Gods. Like Jason said, I'll be leading the discussion tomorrow night for HBO's The Last of Us. We also have coming up on April 5th, we're going to be I'm leading the discussion on History of the World, Part 2. Looking forward to talking about that. We all need more Mel Brooks humor in our lives.
He's on. He's the best.
Yes, he is. And of course, we will also, like we also mentioned earlier, we'll also be discussing the new Dungeons & Dragons Heroes Among Thieves. Heroes Among Us? Heroes Among
Honor,
Thieves?
Honor
Among Thieves. It's been a long day, folks. And now on to the plugs that actually do pay my bills. Honeysuckle Rose Creations, where fashion meets fandom at the intersection of geek and chic. We're getting ready for Planet Comic Con this weekend. This is in Kansas City. It's our first big, big, big show of the year. It's our hometown show. We never miss it. I'm looking forward to that. And after that, we're going to be heading out to the Indiana Comic Con in Indianapolis. We haven't done this one particular. We did work the Indy Pop Con a couple of years in a row. We stopped working that. This is our first time back to Indianapolis in quite some time. I pray to God the parking has gotten more manageable. Yeah, I know. Wishful thinking.
Oh, and really quick, speaking of Comic-Con, just while you're on that, if any of you actually give a damn to see me in person, I will be there, but not at a booth. I'll be working the event, taking pictures and video. So come throw something at me. Don't actually do that though.
I don't get to throw something at you when you come to my booth.
No, if you do, I'm using the guy I'm working with as a shield. One of the perks of being skinny.
Fair enough. Okay, as always, our shops are fully stocked on Etsy and handmade at Amazon. And you can always find us on Facebook, Instagram, and under duress Twitter. That is Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic. So, for Mr. Price, Mr. Teasley, Mr. Wintry, I am Alexis Haynes saying be well, behave, be safe. And you know what? Just turn your damn phones off.